Welcome to the Hyphen Church Podcast, where faith meets the spaces in between. We're here to explore what it means to belong, to grow, and to encounter God in the midst of life's questions and complexities. Whether you're here to listen, reflect, or take a step forward, know that you're in the right place. Let's make space together for what God is doing in us and through us. Now, let's dive into today's message.
Came here to do something, and that is to hear about God in our lives and working in our lives. And we've been in this series, Back to Life. For the first week, we talked about our past self and how the resurrection of Christ, how the Spirit has enabled us to not work in our lives every day, but to say, you don't have to do that anymore. There is a new change. There is something new happening. The old is gone. The new is here. And why don't you start living like it? Why don't you start acting like it? This week, we're going to focus on the present tense. And this was difficult to write because I don't want it to veer into past or future. I want to look at directly what is Paul saying about the here and now. Not what the resurrection promises for the future, not what the resurrection promised about your past, but how does the resurrection promise us a different kind of life here and now and today and our daily bread and what we're doing. And so we're going to look at Romans 8. This is a complex passage, but we're going to break it down. We're going to make it really simple for us this morning. And because we need that today, we need a little simplicity. So Romans 8, we're going to read verses 9 through 17. This is we're in chapter 6 last week. This is Paul's great letter to the Roman church. And he says, "But you are not in the flesh, you are in the Spirit, since the Spirit of God dwells in you. Anyone who does not have the Spirit of Christ does not belong to him. But if Christ is in you, then the body is dead because of sin, but the Spirit is life because of righteousness. If the Spirit of him who raised Jesus from the dead dwells in you, he who raised Christ Jesus from the dead will give life to your mortal bodies also through his Spirit that dwells in you. So then, brothers and sisters, we are obligated not to the flesh to live according to the flesh. For if you live according to the flesh, you will die. But if by the Spirit you put to death the deeds of the body, you will live. For all who are led by the Spirit of God are children of God. For you did not receive a spirit of slavery to fall back into fear, but you received a spirit of adoption. When we cry, Abba, Father, it is that very Spirit bearing witness with our spirit that we are children of God. And if children, then heirs, heirs of God and joint heirs with Christ, if we in fact suffer with him so that we may also be glorified with him." Okay. So Paul has a lot to say about the glory of God, the indwelling of the Spirit, not of flesh, but of spirit. So the first thing we need to understand is that Paul isn't writing a morality lecture here. He's not writing the church in Rome to say, you need to do better, you need to be better, you need to think better, you need to work your own way out of this. He's making an argument here about what operates us. Your operating system. Every person runs on something. You see the slogan all the time, baseball runs on Dunkin'. A lot of Dunkins in Massachusetts and Boston. That's their slogan. Everyone runs on something, whether it's self-reliance or performance or fear or approval or control. We have something that motivates us. Some sort of life force in us that continually pushes us forward, that motivates us to say, I'm going to do this thing because it told me to do it. Or because I'm beholden to it, or because it won't let go of me, or something. And Paul calls that whole system, that whole thing that we run on, he calls that the flesh. He's not talking about just the body itself. He's talking about the desires. He's talking about what motivates us and pushes us and animates us. It's not just your body, it's not just your desires, but it's this default self-powered mode that we all have. What pushes us forward? For some people, it may be positive. It could be, I'm motivated by my family, or I'm motivated by my job, or I'm motivated by love, or I'm motivated by something outside of myself. And other times, it's that negative thing. I'm motivated by control. I'm motivated by fear. I'm motivated by performance. And what Paul is saying is, he's saying, you've given yourself over. You've given your power over to something else entirely. Something else that is not life. The question isn't whether you're a good person. The question is, what's actually running you? What is your motivation in moving in your day to day? What is the power behind you? And so Paul writes this opening statement, you are not in the flesh, but in the spirit. If in fact the spirit of God dwells in you, and this is not aspirational. He's not saying do these seven things, number five will surprise you, about how you can get the spirit into your life. Paul is saying it is a declaration. He's saying your address has changed. You don't live at that place anymore. The Spirit is in you. And we talked last week, we said the Spirit is not some spiritual achievement. It's not some a reward for getting to the peak of your spirituality, of your righteousness. It is a reality. It's a present tense reality of anyone who belongs to Christ. Imagine for a second someone who grew up in poverty. They learned to hoard and to scrape and to survive, and then they inherited this genuine wealth. But they still seem to clip coupons obsessively, and they still panic at every expense, and they still live like the old scarcity is true. The resources has changed, but the operating assumptions have not. They're still motivated by the same things. That panic sets in, and so they are not motivated. They're not living in a place where they have abundant resources. They're living in a place where their old self is still controlling them. Paul is saying, your resources have changed, and so stop living like they didn't. And then verse 10 makes this very careful and clever distinction that the body is subject to death because of sin, but the spirit is life because of righteousness. And that leads into verse 11, which lands it the same way. The same spirit that raised Jesus from the dead dwells in you. That's what gives life to your body. I think that's one of the most hopeful phrases in all the Bible. The same spirit that raised Jesus from the dead lives in you. And Paul's not talking about the afterlife here. He's talking about a present tense aliveness that is made available by the indwelling of the Spirit. This is not some future hope and glory. This is not some changing of the past. This is you are alive now because the Spirit of God dwells in you. And you act like you have this fear and this control that is motivating you, but the Spirit of God is the thing that motivates you. The Spirit of God is animating your body. The resurrection isn't just something that happened to Jesus. It's the energy now living inside of you. When we are baptized in Christ, we share in that likeness, that death and that resurrection. And that resurrection power is living in us. Think about this. We all are on our phones all the time. Imagine a phone that's plugged in versus a phone that's running on, say, 4% of battery. Looks the same on the outside, right? It's the same operating system, the same apps, the same screen, all the same functions. But one is operating from a dying source, and the other one is drawing on live current. And Paul's saying you don't have to run on battery power anymore. You can plug in. You can have your access to living energy, the life force. You have access to that outlet. The question is whether you're plugged in or still trying to just stretch out that last 4%. Maybe I'll put it on airplane mode. Maybe I'll put it on low battery. There's so many things that I can do by myself before I actually have to plug in. Like plugging in my phone, that's the last resort. That's the thing I'm going to do last. I'm not going to just, why would I want to be tethered to the wall, you know? Oh, we think the same way about the Spirit. We think the same way about living in Christ. Why would I want to be tethered down? You know, I'm an independent spirit. And there's so many things that I can do, so many things I'm capable of doing before I just need to plug in. And we think sometimes that the Spirit, plugging into the Spirit, is our available power just to recharge our batteries. I'm feeling low, I'm feeling depressed, I'm feeling exhausted, I'm feeling like I'm disconnected from God. So I'm just going to plug into the Word, or I'm going to pray, and the Spirit's going to charge my batteries. And then that way I can go out into the rest of the world and I'll be good for a few days. When Paul is telling us, stop living that way. Stop just using the Spirit to charge your battery. Live with the Spirit all the time. Be plugged into the Spirit all the time so that your batteries don't run down. Where are you drawing your power from? Now, verse 12 is the hinge on the whole passage because of that word therefore that's there. So now. That's the hinge, because everything before that was indicative. Paul was saying, here's what's true. And in verse 12, he's saying, because that's true, here's what that means for us. You are not obligated to live according to the flesh. Now, Paul uses this word obligated, and this is an interesting term that's been thrown around for a long time. It's the Greek word for the word debtor. So you do not have a debtor in your life any longer. The flesh has no more claim on you. If you've ever been in credit card debt or you've ever owed something to someone, you know the feeling that every time you get a paycheck, it goes directly to them. And you know that it's so hard to save when you're in debt because every time you are moving money, it's got to go to the people that you owe to, your debtor. You are obligated to pay them. But Paul is saying that you have no more claim to the flesh, and the flesh has no more claim on you. It is not your debtor anymore. You're not obligated to it. You don't owe it your mornings. You don't owe it your decisions. You don't owe it your energy. The debt has been discharged completely. And notice Paul doesn't say the flesh is gone. He just says you're not obligated to it. The old operating system is still available, and you can choose to run on self-effort and fear and control, but you're no longer in debt to it. And that's a significant decision, distinction, because it means that struggle isn't failure. It's just old habit reaching for something it no longer owes. There's a well-documented modern phenomenon, and I think Paul was hinting at this when he talked about it. But with subscription services, you know how you sign up for something and then you don't go and cancel it, and then it's a year later and you've given them $567 because you've, you know, not specific in any reason, but you've given them all of your money because you forgot to cancel the service, the subscription. Nobody uses them for years, and because it never rises to the top of the to-do list, you forget about it. You know, you've got an old Netflix account, you've got some sort of old pet food account that your pet died, but now all of a sudden you're still getting pet food from them and you don't know how to stop it, or maybe that's just me. But the obligation feels real. Like, I still owe these people something. There's this, the charge keeps coming, but the service isn't provided anymore. It's just sort of a habit and inertia that's dressed up as necessity. That's what Paul is talking about, this obligation. We feel like we're obligated to keep paying for Netflix, even though we haven't seen anything good on Netflix in over a year. And so we just keep paying because we feel obligated to do so. The flesh keeps sending the bill, and most people just keep paying it because they're like, well, I'll get around to it someday, and then they don't. Paul says, you don't have to. Don't keep paying it. Check your account. That subscription has been canceled by the resurrection. So, we've changed the story then. Paul says, therefore, this is the way that we should live. If this is true, then this is the way we live. And so if the spirit of resurrection is genuinely alive in you right now, what has actually changed about the energy that you're drawing for today? And remember, we're trying not to make this a future or a past. We're trying to make this a present day. What is going on today with the spirit? And I really think that muscling through is a choice that we're making, not a necessity in our lives. Verse 12 and 13, you are not obligated to the flesh. And so every time you muscle through on self-effort, you're choosing a power source that you no longer need. And this isn't condemnation from Paul. This is liberation. This is a time where he's saying, by the way, you think that being tethered to the wall to plug in and charge your phone is you being tethered to one place and being chained down, but I'm telling you that it's not. That if you give yourself over to the Spirit, that if you live in the Spirit instead of the flesh, you are going to feel liberated. You're going to feel opened up. You're going to feel the chains fall off of you. He's talking about an exhaustion that comes from white-knuckling your life. Going through life, grinding through relationships and forcing outcomes and managing appearances, that's not noble endurance. That's Paul saying you don't have to fight those battles anymore. That's running on a fuel source that you've been released from. Most people don't experience their self-reliance as a choice, though. They think that they have to do it as an obligation. I'm obligated to keep up appearances. I'm obligated to grind through relationships. I'm obligated to endure the worst that people have to give me. We feel obligated by expectations, by identity, by the fear of what happens if I stop. If I can't control the outcome, then I don't want it. I want to do it myself so I know the outcome is in my hands instead of somewhere else. The person who can't stop controlling doesn't feel like they're gripping. They feel responsible for it. Like if they let go, something catastrophic is going to happen. And Paul is naming all of that and saying that debt isn't real anymore. That control that you feel, that's not yours. That's just your old self coming in and saying, I need to control this. I am responsible for all of these things. But you're not. You're not obligated to be exhausted anymore. There's a particular kind of tired that comes from working hard. It comes from working alone. Parents know it. Anyone who has carried something too big for one person knows it. It's not effort fatigue, it's isolation fatigue. You're tired because you're working alone. And Paul is saying the Spirit is not supplement to your effort. It replaces your isolation. It replaces your loneliness. It replaces you being alone and having to carry these things on your own. And Paul is saying, you have a spirit here. You will not be alone if you live the spirit life. If you choose to live in the flesh, that is a self-reliant behavior. If you want to do it by yourself, that's exactly what you will get. You will get it by yourself. You alone will be responsible. You alone will get the glory. You alone will be in control, and you will be alone. And Paul is saying that is the flesh way of life. And if you want the spirit life, the spirit is there to be with you, so you no longer have to be alone. You don't have to carry them. And even when you do feel like you have to carry them, the Spirit will be there working with you so you do not feel isolated, so you do not feel alone. The burden is heavy because you're doing it by yourself. We are meant to live in community. That's why we keep community front and center here. Because the idea is that we don't come to church as individuals. We learn individually. We have all this great knowledge now of God. And then I leave and I go back to my home. We learn and we live in community. And the Spirit that God has sent is one that grows in communion with one another. And this fear that we live with has been evicted. Paul says in verse 15, you did not receive the spirit of slavery to fall back into fear, but you have received the spirit of adoption. And this is really Paul being a pastor at this moment. Fear is a power source, by the way. Fear is a power source in my life. I know lots of people whose fear is a power source in their life as well. And it's a very, very powerful source of power. Fear of failure or fear of inadequacy or fear of what people think or fear of not being enough. And what Paul is saying is not what moved in when the Spirit came. What moved in was adoption. You're not a slave running on fear fuel anymore. You are a child drawing from the security of belonging. Fear is a terrible engine. Fear is a terrible motivator. And in fact, in probably the 50s and 60s in the early church, early modern church, what was happening was we were drawing people into the church through fear. What were the words that we used? Well, if you die tonight, where do you think you're going to go? Well, I better give my life to Christ. I don't want to go to hell. Oh, wow, that'd be a scary place to go, wouldn't it? And then we'd preach fire and brimstone. We'd say, well, this is what you do. You know, if you slack off in school, or you don't listen to your parents, or, you know, you don't treat your neighbor well, all of these things are going to happen. Well, you're going to be in hell, and it's going to be scary, and there's going to be fire, and you're going to get roasted, and that's never going to stop. Oh, man, we did a great disservice to the Bible. We did a great disservice to the gospel, because the gospel is good news, by the way, not scary news, not bad news, not fearful news. The good news is you don't have to fight any longer. The good news is you don't have to run on fear any longer. Is fear motivating you in your day-to-day? Is fear the thing that is pushing you, that's driving you, that's motivating you to make your decisions? Or is it life? Is it life with Christ? Is it life with the Spirit? Is it life with God motivating you to say, you know what? There is a better way for me to live. Think about the difference in how a hired employee will work for a company versus the child of the owner of the company. He works in the family business. The employee who's been hired is motivated by fear of letting go. If I mess up here, I might get fired. Or if I don't do this correctly, I might get fired. And every decision runs through, will this get me fired? Will this send me to hell? And the child of the owner is motivated by love and belonging. The security is already settled. If I mess up, it's okay because I'm a child of the owner. Dad's here. Abba Father is here. Same tasks, but completely different energy. And Paul's saying this is what adoption means. As you're no longer hired into the company, you are the owner's son or daughter. You belong to them. And there's nothing you can do that will get you fired. verse 16, the Spirit himself bears witness with our spirit that we are children of God. And the word Paul uses here isn't the ordinary word for testimony. It's bear witness. There's lots of words in Greek for testimony, but this is the word for co-witness. The prefix sum, it means alongside, together with. And actually that Greek word there is the word we get for martyr, for martyrdom. To be a witness, to testify, to go up against something. And the Spirit isn't testifying at you from a distance. He's standing beside your spirit, giving the same testimony in concert with you. And the legal background matters here because in the ancient world, particularly in the Jewish legal tradition, a single witness wasn't sufficient. And nowadays, news sources, if you want to publish something, if you want to publish an article in a newspaper, on an online source, you have to have two sources of that information before it'll publish. And so in Jewish legal tradition, you needed two, sometimes three witnesses for a testimony to be valid and binding. You say, well, I'll vouch for you. That's what that means. I will testify on your behalf. Paul's hearers would have heard that word and immediately understood its weight, that this isn't one uncertain voice. This is confirmed territory, two witnesses, case established and closed. So here's what's actually happening in the interior of your life when accusations start. When you start to hear a voice that says you're not enough, or you're falling behind, or you don't really belong, the Spirit makes the claim, I am a child of God. And the Spirit of the living God, who knows everything true about you, stands up in that courtroom and says, yes, I witness it. That is true. The most trustworthy witness in the universe is corroborating your belonging. And that's not a feeling to chase. That's a testimony that's been given to you. It says you are not the only witness to your belonging. That when we feel that weight, when we feel that fear, when we feel that responsibility, when we feel that control, the Spirit is there to work in our lives to say, remember, you are a child of God, and this is what it feels like. This is what it feels like to be loved and to be cared for, and you don't have to be alone, and you're not meant to carry it by yourself because you are a child of God. That's why muscling through is spiritually disorienting. It puts you back in the posture of a slave trying to earn a standing they already have. Every time you white-knuckle it alone, you're functionally living as though the adoption didn't happen, as though the testimony hasn't been given. And so what does it mean for us this week, right here, right now? What does that mean? You're going to have a moment this week, probably several, where your default move is to grip harder, to push through, to manage it yourself. The moment is the invitation to say, Spirit, come to me. Spirit, help me with this. So the first thing we need to do is we need to notice what you're running on. Before you can change your power source, you have to notice which one you're actually using. Most of us are running on fresh fuel. That self-effort, that fear, that control, and without realizing it, because it's been so habitual in our lives, it just feels like being alive. It feels like that's what we're supposed to do. So the first practical move is sort of an awareness of what is fueling me. I feel this way because something has pushed me this way. What's actually powering your decisions, your relationships? What's powering your decisions and your responses right now? Is it fear? Is it the need to be seen? Is it that you feel responsible? Is it some sort of control? Is it the exhaustion of carrying something alone? What obligations am I honoring that no longer have a claim on me? You can't switch sources until you know which one you're running on. The second thing is you need to start praying like somebody who's plugged in. Verse 15, Abba, Father. That's the practical expression of drawing from the right source. It's not a formal religious act. Abba is the intimate, the immediate, like a child calling out from the next room. It'd be the equivalent of daddy. And Paul is saying the access you have to God isn't performance-based. You don't have to earn your way into the conversation. You can call out right now from wherever you are, from whatever state you're in, because you're a child and the door is already open. I remember when I moved out of my parents' house, I went off to college, and when I came home and I visited them, I knocked on the door to come in the house. Because I didn't realize that the door was already open to me. And this is the relationship you have with God. You don't need to knock. You walk right in. You have access to his house. There is no request. There's no audience. You just cry out, Abba, Father, remind me. And the third thing, let the Spirit do the heavy work. I mean, why not? Right? Why not? Verse 13 says, by the Spirit you put to death the deeds of the body. Notice the agency there. You put to death, but by the Spirit. It's not passive. You're still acting in this. But the power doesn't come from you. And this is the practical rhythm that Paul is describing. You show up, you engage, you make the choice, but you draw the energy from the Spirit rather from your own willpower. You showed up this morning to church. You made a choice and you did that. And I'm proud of you for doing that. And I'm glad that you're here. You showed up, you took responsibility, you made the decision, you came here, but it wasn't all your power that brought you here. Were you motivated by fear to come to church? That I was going to find you and it was going to be a scary, like, confrontation? No, I'm not confrontational at all. You are motivated by a community around you. You are motivated by a love of God to spend time with him and to spend time with each other. Let those be the things that draw you each week. Dallas Willard writes this, grace is not opposed to effort. It is opposed to earning. And that's the distinction. Effort, yes. Earning, no. You still show up, you still engage, you still make the choice, but you're drawing from the Spirit's reserves and not your own. You're not paying the bill. You're spending from an inheritance. And so this week, I want us to check that. I want us to understand that we don't have to white-knuckle our experience anymore. That Christ has sent a Spirit to show us how to live and how to live not in the flesh, from our own power, but to draw power from the Spirit of God.